Hi, everybody, and welcome to Radio Rati, broadcasting to you via Radio Free Brooklyn, located in the wilds of Bushwick, Brooklyn. My name is Rati Gorfine, and I'm a life coach who works with artists of all mediums who want to make a living from their art while living a prosperous, happy life. We are anti-starving artists here. Without any further ado, I want to introduce my guest, who I think is going to add a really lovely nuance to the whole issue of creativity and living the creative life that we explore on this show. Barbara J. Hopkinson is founder of A Butterfly's Journey to a New Normal, a nonprofit with a mission to help those struggling with grief to indeed find a new normal. And Barbara is a certified grief recovery specialist and author of 2 books. Along with virtual and in-person support, Barbara takes Choose to Heal photos, which are cathartic for grievers and open discussion on grief. Her motivation is the memory of the 3 children she lost. Barbara uses several kinds of art in her healing and resides north of Boston. Her website is abutterfliesjourney.org. Now, that's a butterfly's journey, one word. Butterflies is possessive, not plural, but there's no apostrophe. So that's a butterfly's journey, butterfly spelled B-U-T-T-E-R, F like Frank, L-Y-S. Now, folks, you're going to hear a ding here and there because I've done my best to turn off the alerts on my Mac, and maybe some listener out there can get in touch with me at rati@creativecalling.com and talk me through it if you're a tech geek, but just bear with that. Nothing's wrong. it's just annoying. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, Barbara. Barbara Hopkinson. Barbara, thank you for showing up. We're doing this via Skype, folks, just in case you thought Barbara was sitting right next to me.
Good morning, Rati. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. And Barbara, the first thing that struck me was, in reading your bio, I'm very curious to know more about these Choose to Heal photos. Can you tell us what those are and how they factor into your work?
Yes, I saw the idea by a photographer that was using these kind of photos in a different context and thought, oh my goodness, how wonderful that would be to allow grievers to express themselves. And I deal very often, you know, mostly with people that are losing people kind of before their time, and it's just such a dramatic loss and puts them through so much. So what we do is we set up a black background, and we ask these folks to come up with phrases, you know, themselves, and then they write the phrases. Help them write the phrases on their skin and take a picture of them with a black background. So the only thing that comes out is the expression on their face and the words on their arms.
Mm.
So an example might be grief is the price of love.
Oh,
or
wow.
Though the voice is quiet, the spirit echoes still.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're not lost, you're in my heart forever.
Right.
Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very striking, very emotional. And our intent is not only to make it's very cathartic for the people who are doing it, but it also helps kind of when we put it out there, it raises discussion about grief. And we don't talk much about grief in our society.
No, we don't. And just hearing you paint the picture in my mind, I'm verklempt, as we say in Yiddish. It's the image of a face of someone who's lost someone with those phrases. Tell me a little more how this becomes cathartic and how it's used by a client.
Yeah, I don't think people realize it until they do it.
Right.
So I have an example of a friend who lost her brother maybe 50 years ago as an adolescent.
Mm, yeah.
And she wasn't with him directly, but he and their other sister were walking kind of in the woods in upstate New York, and he literally slipped and fell over a waterfall.
Oh, God.
So it was so sudden. And you know, here she is now in her 70s, and she was just helping me out. And she came over and said, oh, I think I'll do one as well. She came over to me afterwards, and her eyes were filled. And I said, wow, that's interesting, seeing that it's been so long for you. She said, yeah, it brought up things and allowed me to think about it and release it and feel close to him. And so, you know, and again, a lot of times these people, they don't all have support systems, and people run from them, and especially like when they've lost a child, which is the worst thing for a parent. People don't want to talk about it because it's such a scary thing. So it just gives them a little modicum of release.
I don't think we should ever miss an opportunity, regardless of what the topic or agenda of this show is, to learn how to deal with grief when we encounter it. Because you're someone who's lived through this, obviously, and this is your life's work for a reason. How is it helpful to interact with someone who has gone through the kind of loss, like losing a child?
Yeah, just a sentence of background. I lost a 21-year-old son, Brent, and two babies. Mm-hmm. And I've run a support group for 13 years, and now I've started this nonprofit. So I deal with a lot of families that have gone through this kind of traumatic loss. And what they need most is someone to listen. So if you encounter someone, and most people know somebody who's gone through something like this or even lost a spouse at an early age or whatever,
right,
they just want you to come up to them and acknowledge it and say, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. Maybe mention their name if you knew them, say something nice about them, and just, you know, maybe just be willing to listen. Don't run, because most people run.
What does running look like?
It looks like they see somebody that has been a friend for years in the supermarket an aisle away, and that person runs around the corner to avoid them.
Oh, God. Literal.
Happens all the time. Wow. I do these grief recovery classes, and I do them one-on-one as well as in groups, and I do them over the phone, et cetera, virtually. And I just finished one with a person from Texas yesterday, and she was telling me she lost almost all of her good friends, even people she had supported through divorces and deaths in the family. They stopped calling her. And even when somebody called back 2 years later, literally 2 years later, they just wanted to do happy stuff. They didn't want to talk about her daughter. And what she needed to do was talk about the daughter she lost, you know. And you need that. You need the support.
Sure. Wow.
And, you know, you have to get it out. And people, you can understand. I mean, they're afraid they're going to hurt you, but it's kind of right in your face.
Sure.
For a long time, so they can't bring it up. It's always
right
there. And so they should know that. But also, I think sometimes they might be subconsciously afraid that, oh my God, if I talk about it, it'll affect my family.
Oh, wow. Like a superstitious thing? It'll rub off or something?
Yeah, I don't know that they consciously think that, but
right,
I do absolutely think that a lot of them think that. And they just have a hard time. People have a really hard time thinking about really difficult things like the loss of a child.
And this is, you did mention, it is cultural, I think, and that is such a huge, that is a huge topic. But I just wanted to backtrack a little, too.
Yeah.
How you utilize art and creativity in your work, and how, can you tell us a little, give us a little background how that came about?
Yeah, my first husband, who's the father of my children, was very active into theater and poetry writing, and he did a little painting, and I was a tech person in the corporate world and didn't think I had any creativity at all. And we went through a couple of difficult times, and he got me to try theater. And that kind of opened my mind up. So I started trying. I tried some theater and then some drawing and painting and then photography. And after my son died, I started writing and journaling. And that eventually became, you know, what is now my book, et cetera. But when I use it with people that I'm working with, I've actually found, and in my own healing journey, that it's stress reducing. It doesn't have to be anything you sell. It's just taking the use of the creative side of your brain and creating something, and it might be in memory of the one you lost, mm-hmm. or it might be, you might be writing letters to them, you might be writing stories about them, you might be painting a picture that they would have liked, you might be creating a stained glass image of a butterfly, which is a symbol of transition, which is why the name of the nonprofit is A Butterfly's Journey.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many ways that art can help you reduce your stress and make you feel closer to your loved one. It's really quite amazing. And I am sorry about that.
we're not live, but we're almost live here.
Okay, well, I killed it.
You, so to speak.
I put it off. I killed it, yeah.
Oh, God. Well, you know, we do talk in terms of, stress relief, but, you know, so many of the artists I work with mine these moments in their lives, whether it's the loss of a relationship or the loss of a human being forever in terms of a relationship, it is so powerful to harness that creatively. I guess what comes to mind is it's a way to contain it. It's a way to contain the experience and control it in a way.
Isn't that interesting? I think of it almost just the opposite, as a way to free it.
How so? Can you tell me a little more about that?
Because all this, you're looking for release, right? You're
right.
Looking for the pain often contains you.
Right.
And so you're looking for ways to not just relieve the stress, but release the pain, somehow release a pleasant, positive memory that binds you even after death, you know? Mm. And it's like these photos, which, by the way, are in the photo gallery on that site you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's just, and when you create something, these people, they'll create a little stained glass heart or butterfly or some image that maybe their loved one loved dragonflies or something. And then they hang it up in their kitchen, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And every time they look at it, they think of them. So it opens it up. It kind of cracks open a little bit, this cage that you're in, and makes you feel and gives you a moment of joy. And it's so important. And over time, it takes time to do this. But we were talking about this last night. I had a women's networking meeting with a topic of overcoming obstacles.
Yeah.
It allows you to think, when you can start to think about your loss as more of that person as a gift to you rather than just the pain and the loss, mm-hmm. it heals you tremendously. And now when I think of my 21-year-old, I don't think about the pain of his loss. I think about the joy we enjoyed together and the fact that I'm still connected to him in his spirit and I can feel him occasionally. You know, I can feel him now. So it brings you into a higher energy level and brings you joy, and that's healing.
That is, yes. That's so interesting. What is his name? Do you mind my asking?
Brent Robert DeLibero. Yeah.
What a beautiful name.
Yeah, he was a beautiful boy.
I wonder about the art also and the creativity opening that channel that you're talking about, that of higher vibration and connection in a way.
Yeah. I bet it does. You know, I hadn't thought about it in that context, but it feels like that.
Yeah.
It does feel like that when you're really involved in, like, I know that when I got into writing, and I had never done any kind of a diary or journal, and my other son, Brad, who was not a bookstore-type kid, went in and bought me this refillable leather journal for the first Christmas after his brother died. Mm-hmm. And so because he did that, I started writing in it. And, oh, my God, I couldn't believe how cathartic it was. And it not only allowed me to get everything out. And, you know, nobody ever had to see it if I didn't want them to.
Right.
But it allowed me to really get a lot of stuff out. And then it eventually did turn into a book. But, you know, in the interim, yes, it very often made me felt connected to Brent and allowed me to write notes to him and all kinds of things that were very healing.
Wow. Well, I want to go further into this, but I'm going to take a little break for station identification.
Okay.
You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And we are based in Bushwick, Bushwick, Brooklyn, that is, New York City. And this segment is sponsored by Creative Calling Coaching. I am Coach Rati Gorfine of Creative Calling Coaching. Coming up in April, I am launching a brand new group coaching experience called the Creative Entrepreneurs Success Club. That's starting on April 6th, and I have a few seats left. So if you're interested, please call me to schedule a conversation at meetme.so, that's S-O, /coachrati, one word, and Rati is spelled R-A-H-T-I. Meetme.so /coachrati. Or you can write me at Rati, R-A-H-T-I, at creativecallingcoaching.com. And for those of you just tuning in, my guest today is Barbara J. Hopkinson, founder of A Butterfly's Journey to a New Normal. And Barbara is a certified grief recovery specialist and author of two books. And we were just talking about how a gift that one of her... Now, how many children do you have altogether, Barbara?
I have four children.
And so
one son remaining.
One son remaining gave you the gift of this journal a year after your son Brent died. Is that right? And it opened up something for you and eventually became a book that was published. Is that right?
Yes.
What's that book called?
It's called A Butterfly's Journey.
A Butterfly's Journey!
With a subtitle of Healing Grief After the Loss of a Child.
Wow. Wow, that gift became a gift.
Yes. Yeah, it's got two parts, and the first part is really describing kind of what I went through from phone call to funeral, a two-week period around my 21-year-old, and at the end of each of those chapters, I mentioned where I thought I was in kind of the traditional stages of grief, just so people could relate to it.
Wow.
And then the second part talks about my journey the 10 years after. The most important things that I learned.
And can you give us a little synopsis of what you would say the most important things that you learned are?
Yeah, there's three main things. And the first one is two parts. It's really be open to new things that maybe you haven't tried that might very much help you. So for me, that was spirituality and energy healing and all that.
Mm.
But the second part of that is to trust your intuition. People have a lot of opinions, and a lot of grievers get hung up in what they should do or how long it should be. Don't listen to any of it.
Mm.
Get some quiet time. Listen to your gut. You'll know what's right for you. Trust your intuition. So that's the number one point. Number two is helping others helps you heal. And that is like so important. When you reach out and help anyone, it doesn't have to be related to your child or your grief. But if you reach out and help someone, not just with money, but with your time, it really is extremely healing. And they're often grateful, and that heals you. It's hard to explain, but it works like crazy. And then the third thing is it's all about the love. And that's even harder to explain. As a matter of fact, I asked somebody who could talk to my son, and they asked him one question, and he dictated four pages. I put it right in the book.
No.
But anyway, what it basically says is, you know, when you're in pain, you're down at a low energy level, but your loved ones are in at a high energy level. And if you can think more about them in the positive and the loving memories, it not only makes you closer to them, it makes it easier for them to connect. You attract better things to help you heal. You know, it's really all about the love and the higher energy levels, everything.
Yeah. You mentioned the second one, which is almost counterintuitive. Helping helps you heal. And I'd be curious to know how you discovered that. What was your first experience of that?
I think it was partly instinctual and partly I got a push from my son.
Hmm.
So I was getting the urge to do something because I had to take action. My 30-year marriage fell apart a year after my son died.
Mm-hmm.
So the combination of those two things plus a couple of peripheral things, I attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily, I pulled myself out of it within a few minutes, realizing I couldn't do that to my remaining son, and realized that I had to make a choice to heal. So, excuse me, as I did that and I was looking for something action-oriented to do, I reached out and talked with some other bereaved parents locally, and then decided to start a support group, which ended up being the Compassionate Friends of Greater Newburyport. That's a national and international organization supporting family after a child dies. And so as I was putting that together and I was thinking about it, it was about 6 months after my son died, mm-hmm. a friend of mine who's a nurse, but she has psychic capabilities and she could get messages from him, he sent her a message that said I should help the parents and he would help the kids cross over. Oh. So we'd be a team.
Wow.
So that solidified it for me. And then I went and started that chapter. We started it. Our first meeting was the week of his first anniversary of his death.
Oh, my God.
I still lead it 13 years later.
So it's amazing. It's not the first time I've heard how people have to go through the depths of despair. I mean, the dark night of the soul to come that close to even trying to join him in a sense before you found. And that led you to what seems to be your life's work at the moment.
Yes, yes, it does. I I was in the corporate world. I was working for IBM at the time.
Oh, my God, really?
And traveling internationally and, yeah, doing international technology stuff. And, you know, and you know, that all helped. But what really helped, yes, was reaching out and helping others, in my case, going through the same kind of struggle. And it really helped me heal. We helped each other. And then as I moved forward, I ended up, you know, during one of the recessions, got laid off from IBM. And I went back in later on for a little while, but it made me realize that, no, this is I need to follow my spiritual destiny, and I believe this is it. And that's why I had to incur these losses. To be able to help anybody else, I had to know what it was like.
Oh, golly. And so, yes, it must have felt like going back to IBM was it's like trying to fit into a shoe that was just too small. I can't imagine what that must have been like.
Well, it was kind of freeing in a way, because I was in a job at IBM in my first 3 years there, and I actually ended up being there a few years longer. But in that particular job, it was one of these 90-hour-a-week, work-every-weekend-and-every-vacation type jobs.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get out of it, but my boss wasn't letting me. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to him and said, the worst thing that has happened to me, that could happen to me, has. And therefore, you have no power over me anymore. I don't care about your quota, your deadlines. If you don't let me out of this job, I'll leave the company. And, you know, I just, it makes it crystal clear what's important and what's not. And that in itself is freeing.
It sure is empowering.
Yeah, it just, I wouldn't have chosen that way to get there, but.
No.
It does do that, and it makes you very strong. I really don't think anything can take me down at this point. I've had other issues. You know, my 30-year marriage fell apart. I lost the sight in my right eye. Very different, you know, different things. I almost lost my house. It's okay. I'm good. I'll be fine.
Wow. We have a couple minutes before I want to start to wrap and make sure everybody has your information, but I'm just a little, just like to know a little about Brent. And am I saying his name? B-R-E-N-T?
Yes.
And
yes.
How, you know, the connection you have now through your work. And how he made a deal with you. You help the people left behind, and I'll help the kids who are crossing over. Is there anything in his personality that you recognize now, as you feel close to him, that was there already when he was with us in the flesh?
Oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
There is no question that it is his personality. And he has come through to me through several mediums, and it always is his personality. And when they recognize him and describe him, and they've never, you know, never knew him before, they describe him just like he was. I think the personality continues and remains. And at one point, I had one of my now friends, who's a medium and hypnotherapist, come to one of my meetings, support meetings, mm-hmm. and we probably had 15 sets of parents there, and she went around the room and told every one of them what their kids were doing now, in wherever they are, and she said, and in every case, it was something they loved while they were here.
How?
It was related to something that was a love of theirs. So yeah, the personality doesn't change. He's very much the same, whether it's a feeling I get or whether I'm talking to a medium and get more verbal.
Right.
Information.
Well, this is a good segue because I'm sure people are very intrigued now by the work you do, and as well as you say it's a not-for-profit. You have a non-profit. How they can help. So could you tell us, because sometimes we get bumped off by the next show, I want to make sure everybody gets your information, how to contact you, anything you want us to know.
Yes, it's Barbara@abutterfliesjourney.org, and the site is abutterfliesjourney.org, as you mentioned, possessive, not plural, and the phone is 617-410-6309.
Why don't you say that phone number again?
617-410-6309, and I'm happy to offer to your listeners a free half-hour discussion about grief.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, this has been a real special one, and it's just so connected to me, to creativity, being something so ephemeral and yet so real in terms of the work we do as artists and how that intersects with the human experiences we all share. So I have to thank you, Barbara, and let everybody know that what they've been listening to in this half hour was a conversation with Barbara J. Hopkinson of Butterfly's Journey. And my name is Rati Gorfine. I am a certified life and ADHD coach who specializes in working with artists of all mediums who want to have a full and happy life while making money from their art. And you can listen to the show. It's broadcast initially on Thursday nights at 6 p.m., and then I'm able to upload it to Audioboom a few days later. And you can find the link to the shows on my website, which is creativecallingcoaching.com. You've been listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you. If you like the show, please let others know about it.
Thank you, Roddy.
You're welcome, Barbara. Thank you. And have a great week, everybody.